War is always crueler when the women and children are in it,
Gideon said in his dusty old voice.
We kill their women. They kill ours.
There was a soft scratching at the door, and Constance stood up and went quickly to it. She switched out the electric light before she opened it. Outside it was night, but Samson saw the silhouettes of two men in the darkened doorway. They slipped into the room, and there was the sound of the door closing. Then Constance switched on the light. Two men stood against the wall. One glance was enough for Samson to know who they were. They were dressed in jeans and denim shirts, but there was an animal alertness about them, in the way they moved, in their quick, bright, restless eyes. The elder of the two nodded at the other, who went quickly into the bedrooms, searched them swiftly, and then came back to check the curtains over the windows, to make certain there was no chink between them. Then he nodded at the other man, and slipped out of the door again. The elder man sat down on the bench opposite Gideon Kumalo. He had finely boned features with an Arab beakiness to his nose, but his skin was almost purple-black, and his head was shaven bald. My name is Comrade Tebe, he said quietly. What is your name, old father?
My name is Gideon Kumalo.
The blind man looked past his shoulder, his head cocked slightly. That is not the name your mother gave you. That is not how your father knew you. The old man began to tremble, and he tried three times to speak before the words came out.
Who are you?
He whispered. That is not important, the man said. We are trying to find who you are.
Tell me, old man, have you ever heard the name Tungata Zebiwe, the seeker after what has been stolen, the seeker after justice?
Now the old man began to shake, so that he knocked the bowl from the table, and it rang in narrowing circles on the concrete floor at his feet.
How do you know that name? He whispered. How do you know these things?
I know everything, old father. I even know a song. We will sing it together, you and I. And the visitor began to sing in soft but thrilling baritone. Like a mole in the earth's gut, Butso found the secret way. It was the ancient battle hymn of the mole's Impi, and the memories came crashing back upon Gideon Kumalo. In the way of very old men, he could remember in crystal detail the days of his childhood, while the events of the previous week were already becoming hazy. He remembered a cave in the Matopus Hills, and his father's never-forgotten face in the firelight, and the words of the song came back to him. The moles are beneath the earth. Are they dead? Asked the daughters of Mashubani. Gideon sang in his scratchy old man's voice, and as he sang the tears welled up out of his milky blind eyes and ran unheeded down his cheeks.
Listen, pretty maids, do you not hear something stirring in the darkness?
When the song was ended, the visitor sat in silence while Gideon wiped away his tears. Then he said softly,
The spirits of your ancestors call you, Comrade Tungata Zebiwe. I am an old man, blind and feeble. I cannot respond to them.
Then you must send somebody in your place, said the stranger. Someone in whose veins runs the blood of Batso the Axe and Tanazi the Witch. Then the stranger turned slowly towards Samson Kumalo, who sat at the head of the table. And he looked directly into Samson's eyes. Samson stared back at him flatly. He was angry. He had known instinctively why the stranger had come. There were few Matabele who were university graduates, or who had his other obvious gifts. He had known for a long time now how badly they wanted him, and it had taken all his ingenuity to avoid them. Now at last they had found him, and he was angry at them, and at Constance. She had led them to him. He had noticed the way she had kept glancing up at the door during the meal. He knew now that she had told them that he was here. On top of his anger, he felt a weight of wary resignation. He knew that he could no longer resist them. He knew the risks that it would involve, not for himself alone. These were hard men, tempered in blood to a cruelty that was hard to imagine. He understood why the stranger had spoken first to Gideon Kumalo. It was to mark him. If now Samson refused to bend to them, then the old man was in terrible peril.
You must send someone in your place.
It was the age-old bargain. A life for a life. If Samson refused the bargain, he knew the old man's life was forfeit, and that even then that would not end the affair. They wanted him, they would have him. My name is Samson Kumalo, he said. I am a Christian, and I abhor war and cruelty.
We know who you are, said the stranger, and we know that in these times there is no place for softness.
The stranger broke off as the door was pushed open a slit, and the second stranger, who had been on watch outside in the night, put his head into the room and said urgently, Kanka! Just the one word, jackals, and he was gone. Swiftly, the elder stranger stood up, drew a 7.62mm Tokarev pistol from the waistband of his jeans, and at the same time switched out the light. In the darkness, he whispered close to Samson's ear,
The Bulawayo bus station, 2 days from today at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Then Samson heard the latch of the door click, and the three of them were alone. They waited in the darkness for 5 minutes before Constance said,
They have gone.
She switched on the light and began collecting the dishes and balling up the newsprint that had served as a tablecloth.
Whatever alarmed the boys must have been a false alarm. The village is quiet. There is no sign of security forces.
Neither of the men answered, and she made mugs of cocoa for them.
There is a film on television at 9 o'clock. The Railway Children.
I am tired, Samson said.
He was still angry with her.
I am tired also, Gideon whispered,
and Samson helped him towards the front bedroom. He looked back from the doorway, and Constance gave him such a pathetically appealing glance that he felt his anger towards her falter. He lay in the narrow iron bed across from the old man, and in the darkness listened to the small sounds from the kitchen as Constance cleaned up and set out the breakfast for the next morning. Then the door to her small back bedroom closed. Samson waited until the old man began to snore before he rose silently. He draped the rough woolen blanket over his naked shoulders, left the bedroom and went to Constance's room. The door was unlocked. It swung open to his touch, and he heard her sit up quickly in the bed.
It is me,
he said quietly.
Oh, I was so afraid you would not come.
He reached out and touched her naked skin. It was cool and velvety soft. She took his fingers and drew him towards her, and he felt the last vestige of his resentment shrivel away.
I am sorry, she whispered.
It does not matter, he said.
I could not have hidden forever. You will go?
If I do not, then they will take my grandfather, and that will not satisfy them.
That is not the reason you will go. You will go for the same reason that I did, because I had to.
The smooth length of her body was as naked as his own. When she moved, her breasts jostled against his chest, and he felt the heat beginning to flow through her.
Are they taking you into the bush?
He asked.
No, not yet. I am ordered to remain here. There is to be work for me here. I am glad.
He brushed her throat with his lips. In the bush, her chances would be very slim. The security forces were maintaining a kill ratio of over 30-1.
I heard Comrade Tebby give you an hour and a place. Do you think they will use you in the bush?
I do not know. I think they will take me for training first.
This may be our last night together for a long time, she whispered.
And he did not reply, but traced her spine in its valley of velvety pliant muscle down to the deep cleft of her buttocks.
I want you to place a son in my womb, she whispered. I want you to give me something to cherish while we are apart.
It is an offence against law and custom.
There is no law in this land except the gun. There is no custom except that which we care to observe.
Constance rolled under him,
and clasped him with her long, hard limbs. "Yet in the midst of all this death, we must preserve life. Give me your child, my heart. Give him to me tonight, for there may be no other nights for me or for us."
Samson woke in a blaze of nightmare. Light flooded the tiny room, striking through the threadbare curtain over the single window and casting harsh, moving shadows on the bare, whitewashed wall. Constance clung to him, her body still hot and moist from their loving, and her eyes soft with sleep. From outside, a monstrous, distorted voice blared orders. "This is the Rhodesian army. All people are to come out of their houses immediately. Do not run. Do not hide. No innocent person will be harmed. Come out of your houses immediately. Hold up your hands. Do not run. Do not attempt to hide."
"Get dressed," Samson told Constance. "Then help me with the old man."
She staggered, still half asleep, to the corner cupboard and pulled a plain pink cotton shift over her nude body. Then, barefoot, she followed Samson to the front bedroom. He was dressed only in a pair of khaki shorts, and he was helping Gideon to rise. Outside the cottage, the loud hailers were screeching in their metallic, stentorian voices. "Come out immediately! Innocent people will not be harmed! Do not run!" Constance spread a woolen blanket over the old man's shoulders. Then between them they led him through the living room to the front porch. Samson unlocked the door and stepped out, holding both hands high, palms forward, and the blinding white beam of a searchlight fixed on him, so that he was forced to protect his face with one hand.
"Bring a grandfather."
Constance led the old man out of the front door, and the three of them stood close together in a pathetic huddle, blinded by the light and confused by the repeated bellow of the loud hailer. "Do not run! Do not attempt to hide!" The row of staff cottages had been surrounded. The searchlights beamed out of the darkness and picked out the little family groups of the teachers and nursing staff and their families as they clung together for comfort, most of them covered only with flimsy nightclothes or hastily draped blankets. From the impenetrable darkness behind the searchlight, figures emerged, moving like panthers, alert and predatory. One of them vaulted over the veranda railing and flattened against the wall, using Samson's body to shield himself from the doorway and windows. "Three of you? Is that all?" he demanded in Cinderbelly. He was a lean, powerful-looking man in battle smock and jungle hat. His face and hands were painted with night camouflage, so it was impossible to tell whether he was black or white.
"Only three," Samson replied.
The man had an FN rifle on his hip, the barrel swinging slightly to cover them all. "If there is anybody in the building, say so quickly, otherwise they'll be killed."
"There is nobody."
The soldier called an order, and his troopers went in simultaneously through the back and front windows, and doors, and side windows. They swept through the cottage in seconds, working as a skilled team, covering each other. Satisfied that it was clear, they scattered back into the darkness and left the three on the veranda. "Do not move!" screeched the loud hailers. "Stay where you are!"